It's time to capture the simple peace of the Amish in your own life. Right now, with Amish Wisdom, with Suzanne Woods Fisher. You don't have to become Amish to make personal peace a reality. Amish Wisdom will help all of us live a simpler life. From living with less to safeguarding time for more important things. By talking to experts and authors about plain living. Suzanne Woods Fisher's grandfather was raised plain. W.D. Benedict was born into a family of 11 children in Franklin County, Pennsylvania. He began his career teaching in a one-room schoolhouse and ended it as one of the first publishers of Christianity Today. Suzanne remains in close contact with her Benedict relatives. And today on Amish Wisdom, Suzanne will share stories of real life and examples of plain people, Amish proverbs, and fascinating facts about Amish communities. Giving you questions for reflection and action. Outlining things that you can do in your own life that make for peace. It's Amish Wisdom. And now, here's your host, Suzanne Woods Fisher.
Hi, welcome to Amish Wisdom. Today's guest is my friend and fellow author, Deborah Cotty. We call her Deb. We're going to be talking about her brand new book, Too Blessed to Be Stressed. And she's going to be sharing tips on how we can simplify our lives and keep our to-do list from managing our life. And Deb, you're going to find, is also an incredible humorist. I've always thought of her as sort of the next up-and-coming Irma Bombeck. You're going to see as we get going just how she just looks at life in such a funny, quirky way. I've just enjoyed her so much. She always makes me laugh. And don't miss Deb's Kindle giveaway on, if you go to the Amish Wisdom page, you can find some details about it. It's going to be tomorrow night on Facebook. So you can go there, but for now we're going to get going and talk to Deb. How are you, Deb?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you, Suzanne?
Tell me about what's going on in Florida right now.
Oh, well, it's hot and muggy at the moment. We're pretty much drenched and leaving pools of sweat everywhere we go, but not much other than that right now.
So you're not getting the effects of Hurricane Irene yet?
Not where I am. I'm in Central Florida. Right now it's a little overcast, but it's not really bad, not raining or anything.
I sure hope you guys have a good hurricane season. This is
we've had a few bad years, but you know, it's not as bad as most people realize. People picture Florida, they think alligators are hiding around every tree and hurricanes sweep through all the time, but it's not quite that bad.
Yeah. Still, I was just happy. I mean, I'm sorry for the rest of the East Coast, but I am glad that Florida's getting a little bit of a break, at least for round one.
Oh, amen to that. Yes, indeed.
So, Deb, let's back up a little bit, because you really are an occupational therapist by trade. So take us how you went from being an OT to a famous author.
I don't know about that last part, but it's really a very cool story, because I think I'm the poster child for it's never too late to chase your dreams. And when God puts something in your heart that he wants you to do, it's never too late. I was a very late bloomer. I went into occupational therapy in college and did it for 25 years, and now it's been 33, but about 8 years ago, I had just finished teaching piano for 20 years and working as an OT with orthopedic hand injuries, and my youngest daughter was about to go to college, and I felt that gap in my life and that emptiness looming. And one day I was sitting in a dentist's office, and I was praying about what I'm supposed to do. I just felt like there was a hole, and I couldn't figure it out. And as I was sitting there praying, I reached down and picked up just a magazine and randomly opened it, and there was an ad for a writer's contest. And this light bulb just flashed on inside my head, and I said, oh, is that it, Lord? When I was a kid, I was just what I call a rabid reader. I read everything I could get my hands on. And one of my favorite books of all time was Christie by Catherine Marshall. Are you acquainted with that book, Suze?
Not only am I acquainted with it, but your daughter is named for her. Right?
Yes. I just loved that book. It was one of those books that seeped down into my bone marrow. And I know everybody has a book that does that for them. And I'm sure your books have probably done that for many of your listeners. And it's something that just kind of takes a grip and just applies itself right into your heart. And so I thought one day that I would like to write a book that would touch other people's hearts, like Christie had touched mine. Well, fast forward 25 years, and I thought that maybe the Lord had that for me. So I started dabbling in magazine articles, and I was able to find a mentor and a friend of a friend who had written some Christian articles, and that was kind of where my interest lied.
Us English people.
Past tense of lies. Anyway, so that's what I wanted to do. And one thing led to another, and, you know, I'm a firm believer, and if God wills it, He fulfills it despite all the obstacles in the way. And I was like the least person that you would ever think to become a writer of any kind. But look at what the Lord did. And it's just been wonderful. I'm about 10 books down the road now and about 120 articles in magazines and newspapers. And it's just been thrilling.
Well, okay, so let's stop for a second, and I'd love for you to give some advice to aspiring writers right now who might be where you are in a dentist's office facing a change in life or an empty nest or maybe just dissatisfaction with their job. What would you say to them?
Well, I would say to them, you know, if you have to search your heart and make sure that God has put that in your heart, that it's not coming from somewhere else. And if it is, you have to trust Him. And I liken it to the way horse jockeys have to view their profession. You're going to get lots and lots of rejection. There's going to be piles of horse poo in your way. There's just going to be. It's the nature of the job. And you can't let that stop you. You have to just step over the piles, wipe off your boots, and just keep moving forward, regardless. And God will bless that.
Well, do you think that magazine writing was a good way to start? Would you encourage people to try that?
Absolutely. I always think you need to take off bites before you try to down the whole enchilada. And the book, to me, is like the big enchilada. And I think nowadays there's not a whole lot of magazines in print left, but there's enough, and there's lots of online ones.
Yes.
That is the best way. I encourage my people who come to my writing workshops. That is the most logical way to learn anything, is to take it bit by bit, bite by bite, and then you grow from there. You learn what you're doing. And then not only does it help you improve your skills as far as self-editing and keeping things concise and short and to find out what how the publishing biz works, but it also provides tons of clips for the publishers who begin to look at you. And when you want to publish a book, that's the first thing they're going to look at. What is your experience? How many things have you had published? What is your platform? And that's all a way to build your platform.
Well, so this is where I think this is the where you and I really met, because what listeners don't know is that we both ended up at Mount Hermon Writers Conference and ended up as roommates.
That's right. And, you know, you were the answer to my prayer in so many ways. I had, at that point, one of the lowest points of my entire writing career, which I say that like it's been dozens of decades. It's only really been 8 years. But that was probably the lowest point I was at when I met you. I had been trying for a year to get my first book published, to no avail. And I had had about a dozen rejections from publishers, and I was getting down to my last leg. At that point, I thought, well, you know, you start to question, did I really hear the Lord right? Did He really say He wanted this book, you know, out? And so I thought, well, I will self-publish if nothing comes from Mount Hermon. And I had met with, I don't know, 6 or 8 different publishers at Mount Hermon, and I just did not detect any interest in the book I had written. It was a historical novel, young adult, based on a true story, and it was a wonderful story of faith, but I just couldn't get anybody to look at it. And lo and behold, He sent me all the way across the country from Florida to California, not to find a book publisher, but to meet a girl. And it was you. And you encouraged me so much, and we clicked right away. And we were just random roommates. The people who ran the conference stuck us together, which I know, of course, was totally ordained by God. But and it was so cool because you had just had your first book published by a small press that I had never heard of before. And you got my foot in the door with them, and they ended up publishing my first book, which was The Distant Shore. And then that led to the sequel, Billowing Sails. And then that led to you and I co-writing a book that I still get wonderful letters from people today at how much it's blessed their life and their writing careers, Grit for the Oyster.
No, in fact, I think that was just an amazing moment in our lives where we both went to the Writers' Conference with sort of business on our mind, and God had something else entirely there.
Entirely. That is so true.
And that's a great way to go about well, maybe any new venture in your life, just realize when God's invited into the conversation, the outcome might be different and always better. But Deb, one thing I have to say is when we were at that writer's conference, I was astonished when I looked at your portfolio of magazines, how you had put it all together, how you had organized it. It was just amazing how professional you were. I mean, you were just ready. The time was right for you, because that was impressive to me. And I'd been writing magazine articles for quite a long time, but never occurred to me to put it together like you did.
Well, you know, I was flying by the seat of my pants. I really didn't know what I was doing, and I still don't, to tell you the truth. And the whole writing biz thing, it's all step of faith for me. But I just thought, you know, hey, when you have a baby, you build a scrapbook and you show, you know, show all that baby's growth from the time they were born to their precious toddler years to school to on and on and on. And so I just did that with my writing. I went ahead and made a scrapbook, basically, of my writing baby. And I didn't know so many things that I've done now. I look back and I didn't know if it was right or wrong or not or what. But it was like the Lord just kind of puts these ideas in your head and you just follow them, and somehow, more than often, it turned out to be a good deal, a good thing.
Oh, it was really impressive to me. So that was a blessed moment, and just for such good reasons. And we're going to be talking about more of your books in the next segment. As we head out now for station break, I just want to point listeners to the TogiNet website, because if you leave a comment for Deb's book, you might win it. And this is a book called Too Blessed to Be Stressed. This is what we're going to be talking about next. It is a fabulous book, laugh out loud, funny in places. And as you can already tell, Deb's the kind of person that you just start underlining. In fact, Deb, if I were going to say one thing out of this segment that I already wrote down, it's if God wills it, he fulfills it. That's a Deb-ism. So, anyway, thank you so much for listening, and we'll be right back on You're Listening to Amish Wisdom with Deborah Cotty. Hi, welcome back to Amish Wisdom. Today's guest is Deborah Cotty, known as Deb, author and humorist, and we're going to be talking in this segment about her book, Too Blessed to Be Stressed, because this is why Deb's on the show. I'm always trying to find a link to the Amish, and even though Deb's not Amish, the book has a lot to say about living a simpler life, a more intentional life, calming down, getting your life into focus. It's just terrific. Deb, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Why don't you describe what the book is like, how it's formatted and what the point of it was, how it's broken down into segments?
Well, I actually learned that from you, that it's a good idea to have sections so that people can locate what they need to find better. And it's broken up into four sections. The first is time management, and the second is developing a sense of humor. And these are all related to ways that we can try to deal with stress using scriptural principles. The third section is cultivating relationships, and the fourth is focusing on faith.
So how did you, like, how they're kind of put together in short essays, and then you shifted into questions, so maybe a small group could use it or something like that, right?
Yes. I like to try to write short chapters, especially when my books are mostly, I consider them faith-based self-help books, sort of. And that's not really a category that exists. That's another Deb-ism. But they're written for women on the go, and women who are too stressed to feel blessed. And so I wanted to remind us all that we're too blessed, actually, to stay stressed. That was what I wanted to title the book, Too Blessed to Stay Stressed, but my publisher won out, so it ended up Too Blessed to Be Stressed. But and the point is to get it, feed women when they have a moment to stop and take in the nourishment. And so I found I'm a potty writer now, because women leave them in their bathrooms, I guess. I get a lot of letter from men who say, I love your book. It's sitting in my bathroom, and I read it every time I go in there. But they're supposed to be for women, but I'm thrilled that men can get something out of them, too. But they're written in a very conversational style. As you can tell, I'm a conversationalist speaker, so I write the way I speak. And I like to follow up with some little dig deeper questions. And there's not many, but there's enough to try to apply whatever the topic is of the chapter to yourself. And in this book, I call them Less Decompress, the little questions. And the topics can range from anything from setting priorities to self-talk to coping with loss to simplifying your life to one of them is even about romance. It's called Romancing the Drone. And so I just try to deal with all kinds of different aspects of women's very busy lives that bring stress.
I notice a theme of chocolate.
Amen, sister. Yes, I have CDD, chocolate deficit disorder. And if I do not get my allotment, my regular allotment of chocolate every few hours, I have to have a choco infusion. And it's quite essential for my temperament stability and the mental health of everyone around me. So if you have that problem, you might consider this diagnosis for your health.
And that's spoken from someone in the medical profession. So what did you want to do? How did you identify the major stresses women feel today? How did you sort of crystallize that?
I've been speaking quite a lot since my book, Mom Needs Chocolate, came out a couple years ago. And I've been blessed to meet with lots and lots of women through speaking events all over the country and through some of my writing workshops, too. I love to attend Bible studies, and I love to meet with women. And one of the themes that I kept hearing over and over, the recurring themes, well, there were two, actually, that I kept hearing from women as we would have discussion groups, and one was that they had difficulty dealing with stress in their lives, and the other was the issue of beauty, the world's beauty versus the Bible's view of beauty, God's standard for beauty. And so I went to my publisher with the two ideas for books, this one, Too Blessed to Be Stressed, and then another one that will come out in March called More Beauty, Less Beast, and subtitled Transforming Your Inner Ogre. And so I'm hoping that these books will actually meet a need that I have heard over and over from women, that they just need more help in those areas.
Well, let's talk about the external signs of inner stress.
Yes, the three F's: fussing, fuming, and fatigue. And I think a lot of times we women don't even realize how stressed we are until our family members start to hide behind the furniture and pull out the tranquilizer dart gun. You know, we have to, we tune in because of the reactions of those that love us. And if we can perhaps tune in a little faster, then we can do something about our stress before it gets to the point where, you know, they're trying to get us a rabies shot because our bite is worse than Rover's. But I think there's definitely signs. We just have to know what to look for.
So in one of your tips to decom stress, which I'm going to mess that up, decom stress.
You did good.
One of the things I really liked is you have some suggestions about how to kind of reduce the stress in your life, especially if you say the point is when other family members are starting to comment on it too, you got to start paying attention. The red flags.
Yes.
So this was a great point. You said add yourself to your daily to-do list.
Yes, I think that's something we women take care of everyone. It's our nature, and it's our job to take care of our families and to do everything we can do for them and with them. And it's all about them for so long that we lose ourselves somewhere in there. And we tend to do that with our schedules, too. We put ourselves last, which seems very biblical on the surface. But if we continue to do that over and over and we don't take a few minutes a day to just decompress and to spend a little God time, a little refreshment time with the only one that can refill our tanks, then we're really doing a disservice to those who we do love and we are trying to serve. And I recommend that we do. I'm right on my to-do list. You have to put your name right in there and don't take no for an answer when all the other activities that seem more important try to crowd you out. And I suggest 15 minutes twice a day to try to, if possible, physically remove yourself from the source of stress. When I'm at work, I walk laps around the parking lot. When I'm home, I have been known to lock myself in my closet when my kids were young, or go out to the backyard and just kind of chill. I take lots of prayer walks just to get yourself away, physically away from the source of stress, if possible. And sometimes it's not possible, but it can be eventually if you put yourself on your to-do list and you want to check that puppy off. But it's important then to use that time to do some deep breathing, which is really important, I think. And I also include in my book some actual physical stretching exercises that really are simple, and they're very, very helpful to help the body decompress a little bit. I call them my six-pack. They're for neck and shoulder exercises that I've developed over my 33 years in physical therapy clinics, and I've used them with my patients, and I know they're effective, and they're quite simple. And then at the same time, we need to refresh our minds and regroup and regenerate, and the way to do that, I think, is to open ourselves up to our Heavenly Father and to have a little God time and let Him refresh us, because it is marvelous how He does that. I think it's an absolute miracle.
You know, I like the idea that you said about actually removing yourself from the stress giving, whether it's a person or a thing or a computer or a frustration with work, and just getting yourself out. One thing I've always heard as a suggestion in trying to reduce stress is you get into nature at least once or twice a day. The best of all is three times a day. You are at least outside taking note of what the day looks like, just observing what that day has to hold.
That's a wonderful suggestion, and I like to do that in the form of prayer walks. And I also, it's a good idea, too. It's a great carbon-type idea to, you know, going green, to ride a bike. And it does more than just air your brain out. It also, thankfully, I live within about 2 to 3 miles of several different, the post office, the library, different places that I actually try to use my bike for those. And you're right, being out in nature is a great way to just sweep clean that brain that gets so cluttered and cluttered and more cluttered with all the things we have to keep up there.
You know, speaking of going green, you have a little section called Papa God, Mama Earth.
Yes.
You want to just fill us in on what that means?
Sure. I was just, you know, I've become more aware, and probably we all have, of different ways that we can do our part to help just make sure that this earth is going to be around for the next generations to come. And that was just my effort in I did some research, and I've been trying to do some different things myself to try to help other women realize that that doesn't have to be part of our stress, that sometimes women feel that, you know, they just feel that they have this nagging worry that pollution and wasting of our Earth's natural resources will leave a destitute world for the generations to come. And that doesn't have to be one of our underlying worriers. We have too many stressors as it is. But I talk about things that are simple, but that we just need to be aware of, like recycling and not just paper, glass, cardboard, et cetera, but smiles. And food, and I talk some funny stuff about how I've tried. I'm not a very good cook, but I try. You know, I'm an enthusiastic cook. And I've tried, you know, putting things together to recycle them in different ways. And one of those is to use cheese as the culinary cure-all for anything that's undercooked. You know, mozzarella can glue it all together. If it's overcooked, you scrape off the burnt crust and pile on the sharp cheddar, and then you can't taste that charcoal. And, you know, if it's really tough, I tend to do that to pork chops. Chop it up and drown it in Cheese Whiz, you know, and just I just have a lot of little things that might help, and they might just make you smile.
Yeah, or make you not accept an invitation to the Deb's house. But we've only got a minute left, and I wanted to just mention in the book she also has these great little sayings. Some of them are from you, Deb, and if I can read one, another Debism. Opportunity knocks softly, but temptation parks its fat derriere on the doorbell, scarfing chocolate. How did you come up with that?
Well, I, as you know, I am a chocoholic. I consider myself a choco athlete. I can take on the best in the world. And I lost 40 pounds a couple of years ago, and to do that, I had to give up, guess what? So that was when that little saying came about. But I didn't give it up for long. I'm back on it. I just make sure I only eat my little 3 squares a day, my little portion control, and I can still have it.
Well, we are just about out of time now for this segment. You've been listening to Deb Cotty talk about Too Blessed to Be Stressed, a brand new book published by Barber, I believe.
Yes. Yep.
And we will be back in a moment. Thanks for listening, and don't go away. Thank you. Welcome back to Amish Wisdom. Today's guest is Deb Cotty, author of Too Blessed to Be Stressed and many other great titles. I wanted to read one more thing that you had written, Deb, because it just launches us into this segment. Families are a lot like chocolate, sweet, flavorful, nutty, and may disrupt intestinal fortitude when internalized in large quantities. I'm wondering who you were thinking of or what holiday you were thinking of as you wrote that.
Well, I'll tell you a story that ties into that. This actually was an aha moment that I had recently. I'm a hat girl. I love hats. I wear them all the time. And even all those years when they were totally not cool and my kids were embarrassed and wouldn't walk behind me because I had, you know, they'd stay away from me at the mall so nobody knew I was their mom, the lady with a hat. But I never really knew or cared really why I loved hats so much. And recently, about a month ago, I went into a writer's meeting and someone stared at this woman came in, she was new, and she just kind of kept staring at me. And I thought, what in the world? Have I got food on my face? You know? And eventually she finally said, "You're Debra Cotty, aren't you?" And I said, "How did you know that?" And she said, "It's your hat." And she said, "All the pictures I see of you, you have hats on." And she said, I'm a hat girl too, so I definitely noticed that. And she said, "That's your brand, I guess, huh?" And I started thinking, oh, I never thought of it. You know, nowadays they're telling all the authors and everyone in business that you need to have something that's your brand, something that sets you apart where people know you. So I came home and I wrote on my blog, or actually maybe it was Facebook or both, and I said, well, what do you think, people? Is that my brand? I hadn't really thought about it. And I got a response from a girl that I went to. I grew up in a small town, and we went to elementary, middle, high school, all the way up together. And I hadn't really seen her in many, many years, but she responded, and she said, because I said, you know, what about is a hat's my thing? And she wrote, "Hats. Hey, are you the Mitchell girl that never combed her hair? Your mother taught me in my health class in middle school, and she told us about one of her daughters who never combed her hair, and after that, she said, I started taking a brush with me in my purse. I never did up to that point." And all of a sudden, I had this flashback of something, a memory that I hadn't thought about in over 30 years. I really didn't want to think about it because I had forgotten how painful it was, but I was in sixth grade, and I was a real gorky, dorky sixth grader, and I was totally tomboy, didn't care a fig about how I looked, and I didn't comb my hair. And one day, I was sneaking in the back of my mother's health classroom. She taught at the same school that I went to, and I was trying to put something in her purse. I don't remember what, but she was up at the front teaching, so I was tippy-toeing real quiet to the back, and I was just going to slip it in there and leave. And right as I got halfway over to the desk, Mama stopped teaching. She stopped talking, and she pointed her finger, and she said, "Okay, everybody turn around and look at an example of poor grooming habits."
Ooh.
And they were seventh graders. They were a year older than me, and there were a lot of boys in there, and of course, I was just horrified. They all turned and stared at me, and then a few started snickering, and I was just absolutely mortified, and I remember just getting out of there as fast as I could and feeling, and all these years later, when I was thinking of that memory, I just wanted to hide under my computer desk. I was still ashamed and embarrassed. And all of a sudden, I had one of those, oh, that's why I like hats so much moments. And it was, you know, that's one of my memories recently. You know, mothers don't mean to hurt us, just like we don't mean to hurt our children. But so many times, these little things really contribute to make us who we are. And a lot of times we don't even realize how far back they date, and we don't realize some of our habits that we do as adults, that they're actually rooted in things that happen to us with our families as children.
I just have a feeling your mom had to go to great lengths to get you to make an impact.
She's done a lot of good things, too, I must say. You know, that one is just a recent occurrence that made me realize how nutty our families can be and how they definitely can create some intestinal fortitude problems.
Well, Deb, one of the things I loved about this book, I can tell you're a student of the Bible. It's just embroidered throughout the book are so many references to Scripture and illustrations that you bring out. I'd love for you to talk about the story of God's sovereignty in the book of Ruth. I think it's called Heart Matters.
Yes. Yes, Ruth has always been one of my very favorite chapters of the Bible, and I guess I identify with her. My name is actually Ruth, my middle name, and it goes back four generations. My grandmother was Nellie Ruth, my aunt was Mamie Ruth, I'm Deborah Ruth, my daughter's Christina Ruth, and we even named our cat Baby Ruth. So I guess that's five generations. But and I've always just
you're adding a cat, yes.
Yes, but I've always really enjoyed, and more than enjoyed, I guess I read it over and over again, the chapter of Ruth, and I just get so much out of it, basically because she was, you know, everything that happened to her in the first part of the book of Ruth is terrible, and it's things she didn't understand. She lost her husband and her father-in-law and everything that she had, and then she chose to leave behind her life as she knew it, her friends, her family, her support, and go back to a foreign country with her mother-in-law, Naomi. And you know, that's just, to me, that's very much like our lives. We are facing things we don't understand and doing things on faith that we feel like we're being led to do by the Lord, and we don't know how it's going to turn out, but He is totally in control of all the details of our lives, just like He was Ruth, and that she became, because she chose to follow Him and to go to that country and to eventually marry Boaz, and she eventually became in the lineage of David and then Christ our Lord. And, you know, wow. That is just so awesome. It was such a bigger picture that she could never even fathom that she was actually fulfilling by making these little everyday decisions just like we make.
I've heard someone say recently that sometimes with God, the shortest distance between two points is a circle.
I like that.
Because that is just sometimes the way God works. There's just so many details that seem so insignificant or so troublesome or like roadblocks, and God knew exactly what He was doing. I mean, in some ways, I'd love to get back just to even talking about stress in a person's life. How would you take the book of Ruth and give it, if you were talking to someone who felt overwhelmed by dark circumstances or difficult moments in her life, how would you take Ruth and give her hope?
Well, like Ruth and Hannah in the Old Testament is another good example. Both of them had extremely difficult circumstances that they were faced with, and if not, you know, nothing else you could call it but stressful. And with Ruth, she was, you know, husbandless, childless, homeless. And her society, and Hannah also was childless, which was extremely awful in her society, very looked down upon and very shunned. And they had to somehow make it through those very stressful difficulties. And they both did it by stepping out in faith and by doing things that they didn't necessarily want to do, but that they felt that they should do, that they were led to do. And I think that's one thing for us. When we're dealing with everyday stress, you know, that's kind of what we have to do, too. We have to believe what the Bible tells us to do and believe what God has promised us. And if we do that, you know, and one of the things that leads me into that I have a lot of trouble with it. It's my nemesis, is self-talk and what we tell ourselves. And I have always had a problem with negative self-talk. It's that Eeyore voice droning in my head. And I know a lot of people, a lot of women especially, have a problem with that, with negative self-talk. And I have a story in my book that really kind of changed my life, my heart about that. And it's been very, very helpful to try to get over that. And that was, I was taking a tennis lesson a few years ago. I'm a tennis addict. And I was trying a new shot. And you know, when you're trying to learn anything, it's a repetition over and over and over and over. And I was trying to learn this drop shot. And I had been working at it and working at it and working at it. And I finally just threw my racket in the net. And I said, that's it. I give it up. I cannot do this. I will never be able to do this. This is a waste of time. I'm not going to try it anymore. And my tennis coach, who at the time was, he's very, very easygoing, you know, long-suffering, very patient man. And you're laughing because you're a tennis player, too, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. But, you know, he walked over to the net, and he put his palms in the air and, you know, kind of shrugged his shoulders, and he said, now, Deb, what are you telling yourself? If you tell yourself that you can't do it, then you won't do it ever. But if you tell yourself, if I just tweak this a little bit with a few minor adjustments, I will be able to do it eventually, then that will definitely become a fact, and you will. You have to think of what you're telling yourself. And that led me to think about, well, I could apply that actually to other, as such a biblically based idea that I should apply to other areas of my life. And I came to realize that there's this magical three-letter word that if we just add it to those negative thoughts that we're pelted with, that it can magically change those thoughts into positive thoughts, into something that we can actually build hope with. And that word is yet. It's so simple, and it's so effective. I just love how it's changed my outlook and my perspective. Instead of saying, I just can't do this yet. I'll never like her yet. I'm not able. I'm just dumb. I just can't do it. I'm not a person that has enough patience to do this yet. It just adds hope, and it changes our I can't perspective into I can with a little more time.
Oh, I love that. I think negative self-talk is something, dredging up memories, getting kind of stuck in that hard thing. I mean, I think even in your book, you talk about pointing people to Philippians 4:13 to think of these thoughts that are lovely and pure and good. And that is so biblical. God is always trying to turn our thoughts to focus on Him, kind of recalibrate. So that's what you were doing. You're recalibrating with the
yes, I love that term. That's exactly right.
We are just about out of time for this segment, and I just want to remind listeners to go to the Toginet website and leave a comment so you can be entered into the giveaway for Too Blessed to Be Stressed by Deborah Cody. And we will be back in just a moment, so don't go away. Welcome back to Amish Wisdom. Today's guest is author and humorist Deborah Cody. Deb, am I saying your last name right?
Yes, Cody. I get it always. And because my first name is spelled a little bizarre, I get that, Deborah, and all kinds of things, too. It's D-E-B-O-R-A, because my mother was just so drugged up when she had me. I guess she forgot the H. So I get that all kind of different ways. And Cody is what I usually go by, but I've heard Cody and Cootie and everything else.
So your website has an M in it, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, Deborah M. Cody. That's my maiden name, Mitchell.
Yeah, I won't forget that. After the teacher, seventh grade teacher, who horrified you, scarred you for life. Well, Deb, there's a section in this book that I wrote down. I loved it so much. First of all, you have a saying that, again, if we're going to do another Debism, here it is. We're just one phone call from our knees.
Yeah.
And you have this wonderful acronym called GREASE, and if you could go through that for our listeners, I just thought it had so much takeaway value.
Oh, I'm so glad. That was actually born of pain, that particular chapter, and it's all about how to deal with loss. And we unfortunately do have those times when the wheels of everyday life just grind to a screeching, jarring halt, and terrible things happen, and we don't know how to lubricate those rusty cogs to set the wheels back in motion, and we're stuck. And so I had some friends who actually helped me write that chapter, one of whom is called Esther, a good friend from my hometown, and she had her little boy diagnosed with cancer at age 2, and she went through several years after that of having to watch him in terrible pain and declining until finally he went home to be with the Lord on Valentine's Day. And so she was distraught, and she was actually distraught to the point of trying to take her own life after that. But she now has just found so much strength and wisdom through her own experiences. She's helped so many other women that she helped me devise some. I love acronyms because I'm a simple thinker, and I like to have something that pops into my head that I can use, that I can easily access. And for those wheels, those rusty wheels that just won't move forward, I think that we need just a little grease, G-R-E-A-S-E, which stands for, G is for grieve. And grieving is part of the healing process, and that deep, deep pain when we have a loss, we have to allow ourselves to feel the loss. And then R is for release, to pour out our feelings to Papa God. I love to refer to God as Papa God because that is the intimate form of Abba Father, the Hebrew version of God. So I like to view him that way. And he understands our loss because his own son was ruthlessly beaten and killed. And he's a big God, and he can take it when we scream and we sob and we pound on his chest. And then E stands for establish support, which I think is so important, that we get some kind of ongoing emotional support with a group of like-minded, caring women, or even just one woman that we can turn to help use their strength to bolster us when ours is not available. And then A is for act, to just get off the couch and move our bones and put one foot in front of the other, and then do it again. And just to keep breathing and keep living and not allow ourselves to fold up and wither away, which is what we feel like doing. And then S is seek godly counsel. I think it's very important that we have a Christian counselor so that we can get a scriptural perspective during that healing process. And I liken that to, we wouldn't ask our hairstylist to fix our car, because that's not her area of expertise. And our soul is oh so much more important than our carburetor. So we really need to seek guidance, especially when we're in a lost situation, with a trained representative of our Creator who is entrenched in godly values and Christian principles. And then E in Greece stands for exercise. And I know that's the tough part. That's the self-discipline that comes in. But I add a few tips on how to kind of go about doing that to make it accountable and something measurable instead of vague promises, which I think we all try to do sometimes. Like, I'll take more steps during the day, but that just doesn't work out. And I think that's something that we need to do for us, because it gets our natural chemicals and our healing fluids pumping. And I think that that's, as hard as it is, if we can follow those things, that I think we will really, really, and they may take a long time. There's no set time, limit, but that's not the right word. But, you can go through the steps at different times, but I think that it's important to just get started.
Yeah, I think healing is really something that requires so much patience, and healing even of the spirit, healing of the emotions, healing physically, just even the work you're in. But patience is something we are short on.
Absolutely.
But I love that comment, we're just one phone call from our knees, not to give anyone this sense of low-grade terror. I mean, we live with enough anxiety, but just the awareness that really our lives are fleeting and we are in God's hands, and this is not the end. We have something to look forward to. In fact, you have a terrific story also about your mother-in-law's passing.
Yes, that was, it sounds like a baseball story because it's called Crossing Home Plate, and I've actually had men turn to that when they're in the bathroom thumbing through my book thinking they were going to read a baseball story, and it is a bit of an analogy, because when my precious mother-in-law passed away, it was very difficult circumstances for all of us, and that night we were at, my husband and I were at her home. My father-in-law had passed away several years before. And we were the only ones there, surrounded by the memories of them and all their things and all those, just the memories and the wonderful things that, and it was hard, very hard for my husband. And we were, men are so, who knows how they think, but he turns on a ball game because the Boston Red Sox were playing. And he and his dad were diehard Red Sox fans. His dad was a Bostonian. So, I mean, our dog is named Fenway, if that tells you anything. And men seem to be able to grieve I don't know, or it worked through anything, joy, grief, anything with the ball games. So we were watching the ball game, and it was this totally miraculous comeback by the Red Sox. They were down 7-0, about to be totally out of the series. They were playing the Tampa Bay Rays, and they were down, way down in the game count and the score of that particular game. And it was this totally unbelievable, miraculous recovery. And Chuck took it as a sign from the Lord that his mom was also crossing home plate safely. And it was just so wonderful, you know, to me that we as Christians know that we are too going to cross home plate one day, and that's all taken care of.
Oh, death, where is thy sting?
Absolutely. The death of how does that verse go? I love that scripture. I think you quoted that to me when my mother-in-law passed. The beautiful in the eyes of the Lord is the death of one of his saints.
Yes, Psalm 116:15. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you brought up your husband, Chuck, who is just a great guy. I haven't met him, but I know for a fact he's a great guy. Could you tell us why he turned orange?
Well, he's the kind of guy that does things in a big way, and he's a health food nut. And I tell this story in one of my chapters in the book. Sometimes, you know, you can take things a little too far, and he had just gotten this mega juicer that was like you could juice the entire kitchen contents of your refrigerator and all your furniture in one swoop. I mean, it was huge. It was like Tim the Toolman Taylor's version of a juicer. And so he was showing off his juicer for everybody, and he decided that he would make the world's most healthy smoothie. And so he would put in all this produce. I mean, just we didn't have room to store all the carrots and the potatoes and the parsley and all the stuff he was putting in these things. And he one day just got a little, I guess, crazy, and he decided to start really, really putting in bushels of carrots. And so he did. And one night at a Bible study, about a month later, one of our friends who was a registered nurse kept staring at Chuck. And she finally, after it was over, she came over, she whispered to me, said, "You need to have Chuck checked out. There's something wrong with him. Look at him. He's jaundiced." And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And I really hadn't noticed. I guess I didn't look at him good enough, but he was, like, glowing. He was like this orange. It was just, I don't even know how to describe it. And we were like, oh, he looks like a jack-o'-lantern. So sure enough, she said, "Chuck, I think you need to have your liver checked, or you need, something's wrong here." And he was like, he started bursting out laughing, and he realized right away it was all the carrots he had been eating, consuming for the juicing. So,
carrot overload.
Yeah. Sometimes moderation is a good thing, you know?
Well, tell us also what you've got coming up, and then about the Facebook party and all that.
Yeah, I'm real excited about, I have two books coming out. One's coming out, I mentioned, in March. It's kind of the next in the series to Too Blessed to Be Stressed, and it's called More Beauty, Less Beast, subtitled Transforming Your Inner Ogre. Real excited about that one. And we're talking about possibly doing a third book about the theme of dealing with, all of a sudden I've lost the idea that we I'll come back to that.
Dealing with maybe menopause.
Yeah, I should do that, yeah. And then I have another little gift book coming out in December, and it's called 365 Chick-isms, and subtitle Witty Musings on Life, Love, and Laughter. So those are real exciting. And then the Facebook party is actually tonight. It's at 8 o'clock Eastern time, so that would be 7, 6, 5 across the country backwards. And I'm real excited about that. Yes, we're giving away Kindle, and we have lots of great prizes, so I'd love to have anyone who can just to pop on over and join me there. It's on my website. If you go to DeborahCoty.com, that's spelled DeborahCoty.com, then you'll see it right on the front page there, and you can click right over there. Oh, and one other thing, while you're at my website, I'm also really excited about my 2-minute stress busters. They are little, very short, in fact, 2 minutes long, little gems of points from the book, Too Blessed to Be Stressed. And we've produced 12 of them. So far, there are 6 of them posted there at my website. Just go to DeborahCoty.com and click on Stress Busters. And they're fun. And I even wrote the music for them, the little theme song. And I hope they're very helpful. And they contain a lot of the little points from the book. act it out. Instead of having to read it, you can watch it.
Deb, you have been a wonderful guest. I'm so glad we've reconnected. This has been terrific to have you, and the best of luck and the best of blessings to you with your ventures. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening to Amish Wisdom today, and be sure to join us next Thursday. Becky Reiser will be on the show, and have a wonderful weekend.